Welcome to Sends and Suffers Podcast. I am your host, Mario Stanley. If you haven't already, please follow, like, and subscribe to Sends and Suffers Podcast. Every bit counts, and we would love to hear from you. So take a moment to leave a comment. These go a long way and help others know what they're getting into and how good this show is. If this is one of your favorite podcasts, consider becoming a Patreon. For as little as $5 a month, you are investing in Sends and Suffers Podcast, and it's like buying your boy a taco, hanging out, and getting to know the good that is coming your way. Monthly recaps, early show releases, and all the other cool things that we do. Thank you so much for listening to Sends and Suffers Podcast. Organic Climbing is the official sponsor of Sends and Suffers Podcast, and if you didn't know, now you know. I have been using this company's products since before my podcast, since I basically started rock climbing. They're cool, they're rad, they're customizable. You can get bouldering pads, chalk buckets, backpacks. They've got shoes. They've got almost anything you can conceive to make you look fly, to make you functional at the crag. Check out Organic Climbing. Put in Sends and Suffers at your purchase. It helps this podcast out. And really support someone who has been supporting the conception of climbing communities since the beginning. Josh and everyone at Organic is all about making sure communities grow. And that is a huge thing coming from a small company that moves massive, massive mountains. So check out Organic Climbing. Tell them I sent you. Let's get into this episode. My guest today is Drew. He is a coach in Houston, Texas. Now, this episode was recorded a little over a year ago. It's an oldie, but it still holds weight. And it's really exciting to hear a conversation with two coaches talking shop about why they love coaching, why they love giving back to their community, and most importantly, why they like just watching climbers grow. I hope you enjoy this episode. See you on the other side.
So my name is Drew Stolb. I'm from Houston, Texas. My relation to the outdoors is, how would I describe it? I started climbing when I was pretty young. I grew up right down the street from a rock climbing gym, actually. So I started walking to the gym when I was like 12 or 13.
Which gym?
It's actually now called Space City Rock Climbing, and it's down in League City.
Okay.
When I first started climbing there, it was a Texas rock gym.
Oh, early Texas.
Yeah, it was one of the earliest Texas rock gyms. When I first started climbing, that's what it was. A few years after being there, it was then purchased by Stone Moves. And
John Muse,
yes, sir.
Yeah, man.
Yes, sir.
I figured I was going to hear a lot about
the
him.
The man, the myth, up. The legend.
Yeah, yeah, dude, a legend.
Yep, straight up. And so he was, you know, he was a big part of that as well. And so I was on Team Stone Moves for a while.
Oh, nice.
In my younger years, and that was whenever I went to Nationals. The few times I went to Nationals, I was on Team Stone Moves. And then as I got, you know, kind of into high school and stuff like that, I've always climbed. As soon as I got the bite, I continued to climb. But after high school, I kind of started to not compete as much and not take it so, like, you know, I wasn't training avidly nonstop to be a stronger climber. I was just kind of climbing for fun and going outside with my friends, going to the gym sporadically. But yeah, you know, I started camping too when I was a really, really little kid. My family, my dad just got me camping when I was, you know, single digits. I was in kind of the YMCA equivalent of Boy Scouts, okay, called Indian Guides. And that was actually how I got into rock climbing, was we went and did like a father-son, you know, rock climbing thing at the rock gym when I was probably like 10 years old.
Okay.
And that was the first time I might've even been a little younger than that. And that was the first time I ever went, you know, I was kind of like, this is cool. I really like this. And then probably went a few more times with that group of people. And then by the time I was probably about 12 was when I started making a habit of it and, you know, saying, I'm going to start going regularly. And then probably by the time I was about 13 or 14 was when I got my first pair of climbing shoes.
And, oh, wow.
And was like, okay, I'm I'm in this. I want this.
Wow, that's a long gap in comparison to now. I feel like kids get shoes within the first like 10 days.
Exactly. So also, you know, climbing has changed so much since I started climbing. When I first started climbing, you know, no one knew what rock climbing was. Uh-huh. When I told people, you know, I compete in rock climbing, they're like, where do you do that? Like,
you how old are you?
I'm 32.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we're rough. I'm 37.
Gotcha. So yeah, you know, I got a lot of weird looks when I told people that that's what I did. And they were like, well, you live in Texas. Where do you do that? You know, there's a gym down the street. Oh, so you don't actually climb on real rock and stuff. And I was like, well, you know, I do, but it's, you know, competitions are held inside. And, you know, I had to kind of explain to them how things went. But climbing now is, it's really changed a lot. When I first started climbing, I don't want to say it was something that people could do that didn't really have a lot of money, but I didn't have, you know, it was not a super expensive thing to do. It was, you know, the gear was expensive and, you know, gym time was not free. But nowadays it's really kind of become something you got to have a little bit of financial stuff to get going, at least in my, from what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think it's because we've moved away from the age of the woody. And for those of you listening, a woody comes from the term of like someone's garage, like that has a climbing wall. And a woody is just like a bunch of wood on the wall with climbing holds on it, wooden holds back then, because, you know, and when we say back then, let's just take a jump back in time. It's probably earliest, I would probably say 15 to 20 years ago, earliest, as far back as like 45, you know, 50 years ago. But like that is a woody. A woody is just a glorified just climbing wall in your garage and that's it. And early gyms were just like woodies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so it makes sense, you know, but now we've gone to more so full-fledged fitness facilities.
Correct.
And which is the direction it needs to go in, don't get me wrong, for sustainability and growth, but that is the difference. Continue.
I was just, you know, the dirtbag lifestyle was a very appealing thing. When I was getting into climbing, you know, it's still there, but you don't see it as much. I feel like,
I think it's just because we're not near rock climbing.
That's probably a big,
if we were near rock climbing or real rock in Colorado or Utah or places like that, I think you would see it. But like when I travel and go to Vegas, go to Wyoming,
you still see it.
I mean, the same people that I were dirtbagging 10 years ago are the same people dirtbagging now.
I got you.
Just, like they're just older and have remote jobs now.
Totally. But yeah, you know, my climbing coach when I was a kid was one of the most, I don't know if you've ever heard his name. His name was Trey. He was the climbing coach when I got into competing, and he was for sure one of the most influential people, aside from probably my parents, that I've ever had in my life. You know, he was just this amazing person, full of energy, a great climber. The parents loved him. He was just a really great role model for all the kids. And being around him and seeing kind of that, all I wanted to do when I was that age was like, I want to grow up and be like this guy.
That's awesome.
He is the guy. And so as I, you know, as my life went on and I kind of went in and out of the climbing world as much as I did, when I got the opportunity to start coaching down here, that was all I could think about, was like, oh my gosh, I could be this person for some of these kids. Like if I can touch any of these kids' life the same way that Trey touched my life, then oh my gosh, that would be wonderful, because he really steered me in, you know, becoming the person that I am today, I feel like 100%. Yeah. So he was for sure one of the biggest reasons I started coaching, aside from just the fact I love climbing, but I was just like, oh man, you know, if I can have the opportunity to be like a role, positive role model, or get any of these kids stoked on life and stoked on climbing the same way that he did, then yes, 100%, I would love to do that.
Dude, that's awesome.
So awesome.
So what classes do you currently coach right now?
So currently at Momentum Silver Street, I coach Advanced Youth Club, which is the oldest age of kids we have right before they can start, you know, into our competitive team.
Is it an age restriction on getting into the competitive machines, or is it an ability restriction?
So our competitive team is, don't get me wrong, we want the kids who are on competitive team to be strong climbers. But a big part of it is their, you know, mentality, their coachability, you know, their etiquette at the gym, things like that. It's, you know, there's some of those things can be taught. Some of those things kind of, you have to just learn, like slowly just being around it.
Yeah, as you go along.
As you go along. And so, you know, it's not just their skill level. We want kids who are there, who are driven and who are self-motivated and who are there to learn and to progress, not just to kind of be there and goof off. Which, hey, climbing is a fun thing. If you want to come and goof off, dude, come on with it. We want you to have fun.
Yes.
But we also want to find the kids who are there to be serious about it, who want a future in climbing. And we want to take that, you know, that little fire and turn it into a roaring blaze and just be like, yes, we want to fuel that stoke as much as we possibly can. So yeah, I teach Advanced Youth Club at Momentum Silver Street. I also teach Youth Club 2, which is kind of our precursor to advance. It's our oldest kids who come twice a week. You know, it's usually a lot of the time the jump goes from advanced into team, but we have had kids go straight from, you know, Youth Club 2 into team or any of the other youth programs right into team just because, you know, we see that it's time for them to.
Yeah. I mean, you know when to move along.
Right. And so I also just started working with competitive team.
Nice. So you're working with Ben.
Yes, I am working with Ben. Nice. Yes, sir. Yeah. He asked me if I wanted to start working with him, you know, every so often. And I said, absolutely. So I think I'm going to slowly start to kind of integrate into that. And because we really want to smooth the transition from our youth programs into competitive team and not have there be such a kind of a gap or like a invisible wall between, you know, here's our youth programs and everything like that. And then there's this, here's competitive team. We want it to be like immediate smooth transfer right into that. Like, oh yeah, you know, y'all are already kicking butt here. Now you can compete.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a lot of fun working with him. He's an awesome coach. He's just a wealth of knowledge when it comes to climbing information, and he's a great person too. But yeah, so I first started coaching at Momentum about 2 years ago, and it was in the middle of COVID. I'd been living in Oregon. COVID was getting really heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all my family lives back down here in Houston, and I quit my job in Oregon.
What were you doing there?
I was designing commercial irrigation systems.
Okay.
For vineyards and orchards and pop farms and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of, you know, it's a very big agricultural area up there. And I have a pretty extensive background in irrigation. So I went up there just kind of on a whim. I have a friend up there that I was staying with for a little while, and then ended up getting this job and stayed up there for a little while doing that. And love being in Oregon. Wasn't the hugest fan of sitting in front of a computer all day, but in the middle of COVID, when things got really, really thick, I moved back down here to be with my family and kind of started climbing again, like heavily, you know, in the middle of all that. I'm going to start going to the gym as much as I can now that I'm back around a gym. Cause I was climbing a lot, mostly outside in Oregon. I still had a membership at the Rogue Rock Gym right outside of Ashland.
Oh, okay.
And was climbing there whenever I wasn't climbing outside, and was kind of dirtbagging for a little while before I got my good job.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that was where I was showering and things, was at the rock climbing gym.
Yeah, I know that life.
And then once I got a job and started making some decent money, I was renting a house with some friends. So I moved back to Houston, started climbing pretty regularly again at the gym, and made friends with a guy named Dylan Stone, who was kind of the coach at Momentum at the time, who worked with most of the kids at one point in time or another, who'd been working there for a while.
I know the name.
Just great, great guy. And he was like, hey man, do you think you would be interested in coaching? And at first I was very hesitant about it because I was like, man, I've really always wanted to keep climbing as kind of my thing. I don't want it to ever be work. I want it to always be play and fun and me being out there having a good time. And it's my getaway.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I don't know if I want it to be a work thing for me. And so I really thought about it really heavily before I told him that I thought I was interested in it. And really what got me to say, yes, I would love to do this, was thinking about Trey and thinking about my experience with him and just how big of an impact he had on my life. And I was like, dude, I can be the person like Trey was being. I think that would be awesome. I'm going to check this out. I'm going to do this. And so I started working with him and started coaching some of the younger kids. And then I think I also did a summer camp that same season, which a little bit different, a little more babysitting, but it also gives you a good opportunity to kind of see what kind of kids are there. And we, you know, picked out a lot of the kids from our summer camps, and we're like, hey, you should join our youth programs. You've got the motivation and the drive. I'm like, let's see what you got. And so I started working with Momentum doing that, and then kind of slowly got, you know, a little more integrated into their youth program stuff. And before I knew it, I was coaching Youth Club Advance and coaching Youth Club 2.
Nice.
So
Dude, this is one heck of a transition from one end of the country back down here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, I guess, so you've been coaching for 2 years. So it's what, 2 years now?
Yes, sir.
Nice. And where do you see yourself continuing to coach? Is this like, are you trying to make this like a permanent career path? And if so, how have you thought about like how you're envisioning to do that?
So I have thought about it, actually making it a permanent career path a lot. I'm not, and to be completely honest with you, I'm not sure how I would go about it. I know the first step would probably be working with our competitive team and kind of going in that direction and starting to get more involved with the actual competitive side of things and not just our youth programs.
Why?
Just because I feel like if I wanted to take what I had learned or take, you know, being a coach somewhere else, I feel like it'd be a lot easier for me to move somewhere and start working with a team, having that been my background. Like, yes, I've worked with team momentum and stuff like that before. And then going to another gym and saying, yeah, you know, I don't want to say I'm certified, but I've worked with competitive team before. I've been climbing for 20 years.
Versus, there is no certification to work with that team. But it's funny. I would actually consider it the opposite, me personally, because like everybody wants to coach the kids that want to be get better. Everybody wants to coach the kids that want to be strong. And so like the way I look at it is this way, like, you have the cream of the crop, which is those kids who want to be strong and really want to climb and really want. And then you have the bottom of the barrel,
absolutely,
which are the kids who just don't really care. Absolutely. And they're not really like, you know, their parents are just dropping them off of that. But the biggest margin is everyone in the middle.
Totally.
Those are the kids who like don't know what they want, but they know they want to be here. They don't know, they want to be stronger and they want to climb harder, but they don't know necessarily how to do it. They don't think they can. But you have the kids who really like rock climbing and it's super fun and they just want to have fun. And like, that is like the biggest margin. And so to me as an employer, I mean, granted, I'm just a head coach, but I do hire coaches all the time. But to me, like the biggest thing that I would look for is someone who can actually, one, coach kids of all calibers.
Totally.
Not just like, because to a certain extent, like the kids that are on team, they coach themselves. To a certain extent, you're providing lesson plans, you're providing drill, you're really fine tuning like the movements, you're going in that, but they want to be there so much.
Oh, absolutely.
That like if even if they have practice twice a week, they're still there 2 or 3 days out of the week. So theoretically speaking, they're almost coaching themselves, you know, because they're competitive with each other. They're playing games. They're trying to climb hard boulders. They talk about like, man, I sent this great hard boulder over the weekend. Cool. And you're like, okay, well, I'm going to step up your training now because I realize you can do harder stuff. But like, where I feel like there's a lack in the industry is in the middle, because everybody wants to find the next Yanya. Everybody wants to find the next Duffman. And I just don't like, and I tell people, I'm like, that's not going to be you. Like, that's just like majority of people. But where we fail short as an industry as a whole is like the middle, because that at the end of the day is what keeps the doors open for the youth program. And two, I mean, in my opinion, those kids are more fun because they're just like,
you're right,
living their best life. But I'm not trying to like squash it or anything. I'm just like throwing out an alternative idea here. And so, but I do agree with you, however, that having head level coach experience, if you want to take over, if you are trying to take over an entire program from head to toe, having a little bit of that experience is things. But I think the more important experience is everything in the middle. And also being able to manage that and manage coaches and manage the schedule and manage the lesson plan to be able to create those kids you
totally
want to be able to do at the top. Because, you know, once again, like, you know, the kid wants to climb V10. He will climb
V10. He will get there on his own, right?
Get there with you or without
exactly,
you.
Exactly. No, you're completely right, though. Because I have such a wide spectrum of kids that I teach. You know, I have kids in my youth program 2 class or youth club 2 class that, you know, that flashing a V2 is a really big deal for them.
Oh, it's massive.
You know what I mean? It's amazing. And to
it's
see that, yeah,
deal.
You know, and then I have kids who flash V8s too. You know what I mean? And they're around the same age, but to have such a wide variety of kids, especially in my youth club 2 class, because my advanced class, I've they're all pretty similar boat as far as their climbing abilities.
Makes sense.
But my youth club 2 class, you know, again, I have kids in there who are drastically, the gap is huge.
Yeah.
The gap is huge. And finding, being able to continue to motivate the kids who are like, you know, seeing these other kids do sixes and sevens and things like that. And they're like, well, why can't I do that? It's like, well, dude, one, everyone is different. You're competing with yourself.
Truth.
It's all, you know, you're competing with yourself. Don't compare yourself to them. You also have to realize, like, failing is okay.
That's a part of the game.
It's part of the thing. And like, that was one of the biggest things that took me a little while to really get to be able, I don't want to say coach or teach these kids, but letting them know, like, it is okay to fall.
Yeah. I have a mantra that I tell the kids. I'm like, if you're not falling,
Exactly. Yeah. And I know so many of the, you know, the really strong climbers we have at our gym, or the really strong kids at our gym, are don't fall very often. And they're really, you know, adamant about the way other people think of them, kind of, you know, they don't want people to see them fall.
On a daily basis, in the grand scheme of what I probably would say I'm trying to give these kids is my attention as a human being, and like, okay, give them my time, aside from just being a coach, but as a person, and really try to connect with them on levels that like they might not have other people in their life that connect to, like, with them on those same levels. I know a lot of my kids that I coach are homeschooled.
Oh.
Or
do you have a big homeschool community here?
I don't know. I'd be lying to you if I told you.
I mean, you can lie to me. I don't mind.
I don't know. I'm assuming. I know, like I said, a lot of the kids I teach are homeschooled or go to private schools and don't have what I would say is kind of the same, like, family dynamics maybe that I do. And like, I have a really, really close relationship with my parents. They're two of my best friends. My sister also is, you know, one of the closest people in my life. And I see a lot of these kids who like might not have that many friends, mm-hmm, or have great relationships with their parents because both their parents are really, really busy. They get picked up by their nannies and so on. And so just giving them somebody that they can talk to about their day and what's going on in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I mean, not even giving them advice on anything, just hearing them out sometimes is like what I try to do for them, as well as be an encouraging individual and help them with climbing and everything. But I learned getting into coaching that there's so much more to working with these kids than just climbing. It's, you know, I'm trying to help them become good humans.
Yeah.
And climbing translates into so many other things in life. You know, being okay with failing isn't just in climbing. It's kind of a learning how to fail is a big deal is a universal thing. And if you can learn kind of how to fail in climbing, then you can really use that and translate it over into a lot of other parts of your life. And being confident and, you know, trusting yourself and, you know, just creating a good community as well at our gym is another big thing that I've tried to do, because the community that I had around the gym that I grew up at was awesome. All those people, you know, or most of the people that I grew up climbing with are still the people that I stay in touch with today.
Awesome. That's cool.
And I'm really bad at staying in touch with people. I'm kind of one of those, like, out of sight, out of mind people.
I don't think that's uncommon in the climbing community.
So, but you know, whenever I see them again, it's like, we, you know, haven't missed a beat, but a lot of the people that I actually find that I still do stay in touch with were people that not people that I went to high school with, not my friends that I was friends with in high school. It's the people that I climbed with. And also, being the person that I was in high school, I didn't have a ton of friends in high school. I was in diving, and I played ice hockey or in roller hockey a little bit when I was in high school. But for the most part, climbing was kind of my everything, and it was my friends and it was my community. And that was what I looked forward to when I left school, was going straight to the gym. And I spent pretty much every waking minute as a teenager as a little gym rat down the street. You know, the guys who worked at the gym kind of became my older brothers. I started hanging out with them. You know what I mean? It became my family. And I don't want to say I'm trying to make that exact same thing at our gym, because it's, you know, it's a way smaller gym. We have a bigger gym too.
Different time.
But, you know, I want these kids to be able to relate with each other and to see that they're all friends, and that, you know, they can trust each other and uplift each other, and like not really compete with each other on a level that's like, oh, I'm better than you, I'm better than you. It's, we're all here to cheer each other on and to have a good time while we do it.
Yeah, no, I definitely think you have the right mindset. And I think the way you're trying to go it is the right approach, because ultimately, you know, talking to a bunch of your coaches that have worked at the gym currently and not currently, and then talking to my own coaches and other coaches around the country, you know, I notice one of the reoccurring threads in coaches that want to be there and want to be in present and that have patience and are engaged. They understand that it's like, you know, it's not so much what you are doing, but how you are doing it
100%
is what matters the most. And it's like, you know, my boss taught me a phrase, you know, it's like, what do you want to do? Do you want to send the boulder or do you want to do the move? You want to do the move, because if you know how to do all the moves by byproduct, you can get to the top of the boulder. Yep. The last part is my little ad lib onto it. But, and I think that's one of the biggest things that like us as coaches and us, especially at a recreational level, is it is really about seeing the athlete in front of you and honestly seeing that person for who they are and where they are, you know, because, you know, Bobby might come into the gym today and he's like, someone didn't sit next to me.
Yep.
Or this is that. And they're mad for whatever reason. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, does it really matter? No. But does it matter to them?
Absolutely.
Yes. You know, and I think to a certain extent, we are teaching that, you know, listen, we are teaching them that, and we are affirming first that, listen, you are a person, your feelings matter, you have emotional complexity, you have some form of emotional maturity. You might not know why you feel the way you feel, but you do know that you feel it. Our job is really just to help navigate you as you navigate yourself through that. And we are just here to navigate you to become a better person and a better human being. Because essentially, like I said, like they'll teach themselves.
Yep.
At the end of the day, they'll become great people. So what is one thing that you feel like you have gained or learned in your time and your experience here coaching? Like if there's any one or two things that kind of stand out.
I've definitely gained more patience.
For sure.
You know, everybody excels at a different level.
Yes, agreed.
And having patience to work with everyone and make sure that they realize that is, you know, that everybody does excel at a different level, and having the patience to work with a lot of these kids to continue to encourage them that they are getting better and that they like, and I just had a brain fart. But yeah, just having the patience to really talk to sit down and work things out with a lot of these kids, because I know they do get frustrated. Like you were saying, there's so many other things that are going on in their lives outside of this. A lot of the time, if they're having a rough day at the gym, it has nothing to do with what's going on in the gym. Mm-hmm. It's probably something that went on at school or in their family life. You know, I've had a few of my kids show up just in not great moods, and their parents are like, they didn't get any sleep last night. They're not doing well today. And I was like, oh, okay, well. See how it goes. I mean, you know, the days that they show up in a, you know, at a TIFF that I can send them home chipper and smiling are the days where I'm like, yes, I did my job.
That or exhausted.
Or exhausted. Either way.
Yeah, know. Either one. Yeah, I find that like after years of coaching, I can always tell if a kid didn't sleep or eat. Because I like, though, like 5 minutes, like maybe like 20 minutes in the practice, I'm like, what'd you eat for lunch today?
Yep, you
and
know.
Like, and they have to think about it. I'm like, the fact of the matter that you have to think this long means you didn't eat. I need to go up to the front.
Get a snack.
Can't get a snack. Can't be junk food. Can't be this. Can't be all of that stuff. You know, or I can tell they're dragging. I'm like, what time you go to bed? They're like, I didn't go to bed. I'm like, okay, I'm changing your workout today. And they're like, I want to do this. I'm like, you don't have the cognitive ability to do this. Like, so you either need to go to sleep and sleep before practice, like sleep really well the night before, or know that I'm going to start changing your workout. And it teaches them the consequences of their actions too, a little bit, you know, and hopefully it's not. It's well within their control. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. I mean, you know, they are a minor, so things change for them. It's interesting, man. So like you mentioned, I guess you did mention that. You said your coaching style is so different because you really try to build the relationship with them.
I really do.
Is there anything else that you feel that you try to approach uniquely that is different or is unlike other coaching styles or coaching techniques that you've seen?
Think about that.
It can be a later question.
Okay.
It can definitely be a later question. So now where do you see yourself in the next like couple years? Like, do you, like we said, you want to make a career coach.
Yes, yes.
Can you see that now? Like, is that something like you say, like, okay, right now you can say like, yes, I can see myself in 5 years still coaching. I'm still growing. I'm making the professional moves that I want. I'm making the financial moves. I'm buying a house. I'm moving on. Like, do you see all of these things, like currently where you're standing right now or sitting? Can you see these things in your future?
Nope, not at all. Absolutely.
Why?
Not. I'm not very good at looking into the future for myself.
Do you do it for your athlete?
I do it for my athletes. Absolutely. I'm always looking in I feel like, to the future for all the kids.
So like when you have an athlete, so let's say you have an athlete that gets in your youngest program.
Correct.
Like how far in the future, and I'm not saying like, you know, you're like, you know, we're not like the watchmaker here making every move of their life. If you're planning it out, but you do like, you know what I mean? Like you get a vision for a kid. You're like, okay, like if you stick around for like 5 years until you're like 12,
yep.
Like if you stick around until you're 12 and that, you know, why do you have a hard time doing that same thing for yourself?
I don't, that's a good question. You know, I've always kind of been kind of bounced around with what I wanted to do and where I was going. And I lived on the road for a little while. And when I moved out of Texas after kind of a rough breakup, and just kind of a friend of mine was living in an off-grid cabin up in Colorado and said, hey, man, I think this would be good for you. So I went up there and stayed with him for a little while. And I love living on the road. I'm not going to lie. I like to have a place to call home, but I also really enjoy kind of the not knowing what's coming next. And I know for a fact, I always want the outdoor industry and climbing to be part of my life. And it's something I'm not going to be able to shake because it's in me.
I get that.
It's part of my life.
But I can see that. I can see that for you.
But as far as, you know, the actual coaching aspect of it, I don't know. I would love to do it as a career.
What's the biggest barrier for you, like creating it now? Because that's why I asked. It's like, because I can tell you're passionate about it. And it's like, it comes out through your voice. It oozes out of you, you know, and I can see that. It just surprises me that like, if you're, for someone who has so much passion towards something, the fact of the matter that like, you know, I can see you thinking about a year or two in advance of like, okay, I'm still going to be coaching. But like, you know, I know, and I'll speak for myself here, turning it inwards for me, it's like coaching is my career, but I also want to own a home. I also want to travel the world. I'm closer to owning a home now. I've already climbed in Spain, Mexico. I've climbed all over the United States. I'm getting ready to go to South America to climb.
Good for
like,
you.
But these are like, you know, but I'm doing this all within the confines of, you know, within the world of coaching. And, you know, and there's some strategic moves that I have to make inside and outside of my coaching world, you know, like, you know, but these are things that I want to do because like coaching is my job and I'm passionate about my job. But me as a climber, I have other ambitions I want to do.
Exactly.
And so I guess the thing is like, you know, and if it's not something you know now, it's not something you know now. I encourage you to think about it because, you know, finding coaches that care, no one, you know, Teddy Roosevelt said it, no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care. And finding coaches that care are hard. Finding coaches that care that are malleable is even harder. And finding coaches that are care and are malleable and that are planning to be around are, it's like discovering whether string theory is real or not. Like it's very, 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 very rare. I cannot stress how rare it is. You know, I'm not trying to put you in the hot seat here.
Oh, no.
I just, you know,
bring it.
It's just my challenge for you to think about it because once again, good coaches in this industry are hard to find because most people just look at it as glorified babysitting.
And if I could support myself doing it, I would absolutely 100% see myself doing this for the rest of my life. I would, if I had the money right now to not worry about money, I would do what I do right now for free.
Fair enough. But you shouldn't have to.
But
you shouldn't have to.
I definitely don't. I'm definitely not.
So like, I mean, if you're comfortable talking about this, yeah. Like, you know, I will tell you this and I give the caveat in this is like, you know, I come from a different generation of coaches. I coached for a very long time. I started off as a subcontractor for coaching and it was a very different world. And then I've moved into a salary position and I've moved into a different world in that around that realm. And so like, as it stands right now with the hours and are you hourly?
Hourly right now.
Okay. Yep. So you're not solid. So as it stands right now, hourly, are you able to make a living coaching full time?
That's tough because I live with my parents right now.
Able to, like, would you be able to save money for an apartment? Would you, like, if you moved out on your own, do you feel like?
I don't think I could move out on my own right now with the amount of money, with the
coaching
way
is making.
Coaching, the money that I make right now coaching, I would be struggling to live on my own right now.
Yeah. And I think that, and you know, and it's like, that is a reoccurring thread that I'm starting to notice that is happening. And I think hopefully it will change because, like, once again, like, I cannot stress how hard it is to find, like, very good coaches that want to be there. Like, it is something. Oh, hold on one second. Make it a little trust. It is something that is, like, very, 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 very rough. Do you guys get other opportunities to, like, make income through, like, private lessons, events?
So I also do private lessons as well.
Okay, cool.
I do, as it is right now, I work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I coach every one of those days, 4 days a week. I do private lessons two of those days. I would probably do them more, except I live pretty far away. I live, you know, with traffic, I live about an hour and a half away from the gym.
Oh, wow.
So I make, you know,
Thank you for being here, by
the way. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, there's days where I go coach where I actually lose money being up there. So, because I drive a big diesel truck, I mean, I live a long way away. So I'm definitely not doing this for the money. There are for sure days where I go up there to coach. If I'm only going up there to coach for the whatever 2 hours, 2.5 hours that I'm coaching, I'm usually breaking even or possibly losing money because I like to provide snacks for my kids too. And I don't make my kids, like, I tell them to bring their own snacks. They usually don't.
Does the gym not pay for that?
No, no.
Have you asked them to pay for that?
You know,
like, this is kind of me just coming from a coach who's coached coaches and, like, who's been doing this for a while. It's like, it should not be your responsibility. Your only responsibility should be to inspire, encourage, motivate, and grow. But other than that, your job should provide all the resources.
Nobody expects it from me.
You know?
No one expects it from me.
No, no one expects it from you. But the thing, I guess my question is, have you asked them to take over that responsibility or to ask them to cover that thing? Because, like, the most they'll say is no. And right. Then you can continue to do it on your own.
Right.
But the reality of it is these are things that, like, the program should be providing because you're building legacy. Like, you're guaranteeing that, like, listen, this kid that's paying God knows how much for their mom and their nanny and their Porsche Cayenne to drop them off.
Exactly.
To pay. Like, they're going to be in the program because of the work and the effort and the love and the consideration that I'm putting into it. They're going to be in this program probably for the next 5 to 10 years. So whatever that monthly due is, plus shoes, plus snacks, plus comps, plus whatever else that they decide to get their hands on that they buy from the gym, adding that all up. I mean, you know, I don't know the actual math, but, you know, if you get a kid in from the very beginning and they graduate all the way through team and they graduate out of their 19, you know, you probably make close to, like, you know, I don't know, close to $250,000 off of one
off
kid.
Off of one kid. It's off kind of, one it's kid. A lot of money.
I mean, this is a stretch. I am not doing the math right now, but it's like, I'm just running the real quick numbers in my head, knowing that the cost significantly goes up for each program that they get into.
Totally.
Like, a higher level, like, it is significantly more expensive.
Our competitive team is not cheap. I do not believe, if I would have wanted to be on our competitive team that we have now at Momentum when I was a child, I wouldn't. My parents would have been like, dude, we can't afford that.
No, there's no way. My parents would have been like, no.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
My dad would have been like, I will take you to Rocks before I will pay for this.
It's, you know, it's very expensive.
It is an affluent sport. It's an issue. It's like people want, like, socioeconomically disenfranchised or socioeconomically struggling people to get involved. But, like, it is an affluent, especially now. Like, maybe in the days of the Woody, it was a little cheaper.
Yeah.
But even then, it had its own downfalls then, which is culture and different things like that and just attitudes and, you know, just welcomeness. It's like, it was different. Like, you know, you give and you take, you know, and it's like, but now it's like, I mean,
it's like, yeah, like I said, it's changed a lot. I mean, it's changed a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I know how much it is to have three, to have a family of three and have all three of your kids in my program. Like, and I do my best to help people when I can, but, you know, my hands are tied to a certain extent.
I want to say the gym that I started climbing at, I think it was like right over $200 or something like that for the annual membership. And so my parents, you know, my big gift for, like, my birthday and my Christmas type thing was like, boom, we got you a month or a year long membership at the rock climbing gym down the road. And, you know, and that was
$200.
And it was like, yeah. And it was like $200 for the full year.
That's historic. That's like, that's not a thing.
You know, right. Right. And I bought my first pair of climbing shoes. You know, I was probably 14, and I'd helped one of my buddies do a lock-in at our gym for, like, Boy Scouts or something like that. And I'd stayed there all night, helped him out, do a lock-in. And then the next, you know, morning came, everybody left, and I was kind of cleaning up, and I looked down on the ground. I was like, is that a $100 bill folded up on the ground? And I picked it up and I was like, oh my gosh, I found $100. And I went up to my friend. And I was like, hey, I found this on the ground. And he's like, oh, okay, cool. I'll put it in the drawer. And if nobody finds it, you know, if nobody comes back for it in 2 weeks, it's yours, dude. And so, you know, time went by and I came into the gym one day and he said, hey, this is for you. And he gave it to me. And I was like, oh, no way. He's like, yeah, nobody ever came back for it. And so I took that. And that was how I went and bought my first pair of climbing shoes.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, you know, that was a crazy moment for me because, you know, I'd been wanting my own climbing shoes since I'd been into climbing, but I couldn't afford my own climbing shoes. And mm-hmm. that was a lot of money, especially for a kid like my age then. And in all honesty, you know, the shoes at the gym, they didn't really have specific rental shoes like they do now. Mm-hmm. The shoes that our gym had were actual climbing shoes and they just had bought a lot of, you know.
Yeah. Rental shoe game. Yeah. Like the industry has changed a lot.
Yes, it has. But yeah, you know, so like I said, as far as a future for me coaching, if I could see myself being able to support myself doing what I do right now, dude, I would love it. Oh my gosh. I would do this for the rest of my life. No questions asked. That is where I'm kind of like up in the air about my future is being able to support myself doing this. I'm not a super ambitious person when it comes to money. I feel like I give away most of the stuff I have. I definitely am not doing this for the money. I'm in a very unique position right now living with my parents, not having probably a lot of the bills and things that most people have that are my age. Mm-hmm. And so I've taken this, you know, really unique opportunity to give back into the sport that I care so much about and to just share my love and gratitude for climbing with all the kids that I teach.
Are you a big reader?
Comes and goes.
I make a suggestion for you, a book you should read. It's You Are a Badass at Making Money. And it's a book about knowing, I'll send it to you. It's about knowing your worth. A friend recently recommended it to me. And I read the foreword and I read the first two chapters and I was like, okay, bet. Like this is really good. Cause I have that problem in other aspects of my life and knowing just like some side hustles and some things that I do. But, you know, I really encourage you to like definitely think about how you can make it a living and think about how you can do it. Because once again, like the turnover of coaches is so high. And like I said, my passion in life is definitely coaching, teaching kids. I like coaching coaches. I like inspiring people to do it. Like my favorite place in the world is belaying you on your prod, whether you're sending or not, or spotting you. But on top of that, like it is equally as encouraging people to do what I do. And I would, you know, by no means do I want to change your core or your essence, but I do want to encourage you to know your worth. And I do want to encourage you to fight for what you're worth. And I do want to encourage you to know to advocate for yourself. Because if you don't advocate for yourself, you won't advocate for anyone else. Like, you know, simply put, like if you want to advocate for yourself, when you fall in love and you're with someone, if you don't have a firm belief and practice of advocating for yourself, you can't advocate for someone else. And you learn how to advocate for your kids more. And it's like, and you know, I'll probably get in trouble saying this, but like, you know, we compete with space, sometimes with Team Texas to use the climbing gym and things like that for my program and my kid. And the Team Texas coaches know I am ruthless. When it comes to that, I'm like, no. And like, they're like, well, I'm like, no. And like, it was not on the schedule. You guys did not put it on the schedule. And literally the boss has to call me and be like, I need you to let this happen. I'm like, okay, cool. That's fine. And they're like, and I can tell their frustration in their voice. They're like, why do you make me do? I'm like, it is not my fault. We were allowed to do this. This is happening. And if the schedule or the things change, that's it. But like, I'm a little bit of a hard ass. I'm known as that. But like, I will unequivocally, ruthlessly piss whoever I need off in advocacy for my kids. And the same thing is I've had to learn how to start doing it for myself more. And so I definitely want to encourage you to like, you know, whatever you got to do, like whatever you have to do to make it work for you. And if this is something you really love doing, and if this is something you like, man, I wish I could make a career of it. Like wishes have been fulfilled on less, you know.
You're right.
You know, and or as that, you know, I forget what rap song it is, but like, you know, listen, I believe you have the skills and the knowledge to learn how to cook without a kitchen. You know, you can cook without a stove, homeboy. You can make it happen. It's just, you know, there is a will, there is a way. And at the end Absolutely. Of the day, like, I would just encourage you to like really fight for what you want, because good coaches, once again, are very, very, very hard to find. Most people come into this sport with this rose-colored glasses of like, like I said earlier, I want to coach Yanya and Duffman, or I want to do this, or these kids aren't just like motivated enough, or this and that and this and that. And at the end of the day, what they don't realize is they are talking about themselves. Yes, they are talking about how the kids don't do this. Yes, they are talking about how this isn't happening. But at the end of the day, what they are projecting, they are talking to their younger self, maybe, that wasn't as motivated, or they are just talking at the kids. They are not talking with the kid. They are not engaging with them because their expectations are not being met. And what they don't realize is their expectations are built on principles and thoughts that have nothing to do with these kids. They are built on principle, on their own principles, on their own thoughts, on their own thing, and they have nothing to do with the children. And the fact of the matter that you think about the principles that you want to build and the expectations that you want to grow and how you want to take the kids where you want to go, and you're thinking about them first, and then you're building it around that, is massive. And most people don't do that. Like, you know, and, you know, and almost, like I said, in almost 20 years of coaching, like, it is so rare to find people who want to do that. Most people love their job and they want to clock out. There's like three people. They love their job. They want to clock out. They love the coaching and they're like you, or they just don't really care. They're just doing it to just do to like, cause they're in college, or they just want something to pass the time, or they want a free membership.
Yep.
You know? And so I definitely encourage you, you know, and I'm happy to help you in any way, shape or form. I'm happy to bust anybody's balls. I come in like Katy Perry and bring in the wrecking ball, or was it whoever sung that song? I don't remember.
I think it is. I think you're right.
Or is it Miley?
Miley Cyrus. Yeah. Girl, my bad, Katie. You out? Miley, you in. What's up, girl? Miley from Texas, too, anyway. So what's up, girl? But yeah, man, I would just encourage you, however it can make it, you know, and I would ask like Ben. Ben is a great resource.
He is. He really is.
I would ask anybody, man. But like, if you start asking, you will get what you want. But it is something well within your wheelhouse. And the only reason why I'm kind of stressing it, and I'll shut up about it after this statement, but like, I know it's within your wheelhouse to do this because you were a climber. You have the ability right now to walk up to a boulder problem outside of your pay grade and piece it together. Whether you'll send it or not in this day, it doesn't matter. But you have the ability to start putting it together, start having aha moments, start having those near misses, connecting the dots, linking sequence together, starting linking the chains together. Like I said, whether you send it today or not, you might like, oh, it's an issue of finger strength, or it's an issue of like my rotator cuff. It's like, and you can do all the work to like strengthen yourself, and you can do all the work to do like make this boulder happen. Why can we not, as climbers, redirect that same energy towards wanting what you want, or social problems, or
you're right,
you know, or wanting a successful love life, or wanting a better career, or wanting spirituality, or you know, the list is endless, you know? But I just say, like, you have the tools necessary. It's just the hard part is just getting on the freaking boulder.
Yep.
You know, just getting on
100%, the boulder, man.
Yeah. Sorry to kind of go on this, like little preachy thing.
That was
here.
Great. I loved it.
Yeah. No, it's just thinking about it. Like I said, it's something. Yeah, man, it's a rarity, man. And like when you see something that's good for kids and the community, you know, you got to do everything you can to hold on to it. You know, so do you have any aspirations or goals for your own personal climbing that you're working on right now?
I mean, so again, with me deciding to coach, I was so hesitant about it because I knew the more time I spent in the gym working, the less time I'd probably want to be there climbing. And so again, I'm there a lot. I pretty much live there, and it's hard for me to find the stoke for myself. I'm great. I've learned wonderfully how to give my stoke to the kids. Mm. But a lot of the time, at the end of the day, after being there for 10 plus hours,
No, I get that.
After being there for 10 hours and I finally am ready to clock out, I'm like, do I want to go put in 2 hours on the moon board for a second? Or do I just want to go home and eat dinner? Yeah, and I'm like, I just think I want to go home and eat dinner, and I'll go home and hop on my hangboard for an hour. And, you know, even though I'm not at the gym anymore, I'll still do like a nice exercise. But again, being at the gym as often as I am is hard for me to find time for my own goals. Yeah. So I do most of my training and most of my conditioning and everything like that at my house. I have a pretty nice setup
for
training in my house. So
the dojo at home is key.
Right, right. I do a little tons of training at my house. I mean, every day, right when I wake up, I probably spend 30 minutes on my hangboard and handstand canes. But again, if all I was doing was coaching too, I think it would be different. But I've kind of supplemented, you know, I do staff work too at our gym, just so I can have extra income while I'm at the gym already. Because if I'm going to be at the gym coaching for 2 hours, I might as well have been there for a few hours before to make it worth me driving all the way up there and being there.
That makes sense. Yeah. I train before practice because I don't want to be like you. I don't want to be there after practice. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, it's hard because you do have to create boundaries.
You really have to create
strong boundaries. One thing that I have learned that it works really well with keeping your psyche, if you have to train in the gym afterwards or before, always have a rocking set of playlists available.
Yes, music changes everything. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, so this is an interesting question I've recently started asking. I haven't asked everybody. I'm trying to remember to ask it. If there is one album or playlist you could play for an entire session, what would it be? One album or playlist?
Man, that's tough. I have a lot of really good ones. I'm a music snob, man.
Fair enough.
I'm a music snob, and it does change pretty regularly. But
mine recently has been Carter Number 3.
Oh, yes, yes.
Like, I feel like it's just a banger from the get-go. There's only one song in there that's kind of like, it's not great, but if I time my workout where I'm having my rest, La La, it's like, okay. But Carter Number 3 is like,
that's your
guy too. Right? Yeah, because like you started off and you're just like, okay, the warm-up is great. And then the next song, and it just keeps flowing. And I feel like it just has a good beat. It's long enough too. The whole album is long enough too where like you can get a full session in. Like if you like, especially if you go in with a plan.
I like that.
Yeah. I'm curious.
Lately I listen to a lot of really heavy stuff when I'm climbing. I really I run too. And I seem to listen to more like house stuff, like trancey stuff when I run.
I do too. It's better to get into like, you want to get lost.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But when I'm climbing and like trying hard stuff, I listen to some pretty heavy, like bass stuff. I'm really like, especially I've always been a huge fan of Minnesota. I don't know if you've ever heard of Minnesota.
No, but I will now.
So I really like Minnesota. And lately I've been listening to a lot of Ivy Lab when I climb.
Oh, I know that.
And so I really find that.
I've heard of Ivy Lab. Wow. I haven't heard that in a long time.
I actually just saw them live a few days ago. But yeah, I've been listening to them a lot while I climb too. And there's just, I don't know. I can think it's the bass and stuff that gets me amped.
Yeah, I've started a playlist and I'm about to like clean out all my playlists, but I have these playlists called Clip and Chains, and I have Clip and Chains 1 through 4. And I'm just like slowly making Clip and Chains 5 or 4 right now. I think it's 5, but Clip and Chains 1 through 4 has all been hip hop. And so Clip and Chains 5 now it's more kind of like indie rock kind of things like that. I'm struggling to make this playlist, but I generally try to make the playlist 20 songs, 20 to 30 songs.
So you have like a nice time, like an hour.
Yeah, because I find that like 20 to 30 songs, like if I remember correctly here, just doing the math, like let's just say the average song is what, 3.5 minutes long. So what, 3? Yeah, so it's like just under... It's just under an hour and a half, 90 minutes. So
perfect,
like
perfect workout.
Yeah. Yeah. Session. So totally. It's like, it's enough, you know, especially if you go in with a plan. So like an hour and a half, and then like the last, like, you know, 20 minutes of that or 10 minutes of that, I'm usually just like, I actually kind of need silence so I can like stretch and like kind of open up my body and kind of like make sure I'm not so lost in the music that I'm not like listening to like the creaks and the aches of my body. But yeah. So I think like, 30, I have to look. I think they're like 30 songs. It might be 30 or 40, but needless to say, there's a reason for it. Is it raining?
Nope.
Nah, it's just creaky. But yeah. I was just curious, but yeah. Okay.
Music is a must, especially when I'm going in to do a sesh. Cause I hate to say this too, but being at the gym as often as I am, I know most of the people there, and it's really hard for me to warm up without getting distracted and carry, you know, stuck in a conversation. And I love to talk to people.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love talking to all my homies and stuff at the gym, but you know, I'll be like, you know, I'll be stretching and warming up, and then somebody walks by and I'm like, hey, how are you? And then before I know it, I've been talking to them for 15 minutes. And I'm like, there goes my warm up. I need to start from ground zero again. I know. So I like to pop in headphones too, just because it also gives me a little bit of like anonymity when I'm
it's like the library thing. Like if someone's at the library and you see your homie, but they're wearing headphones. Yeah, you're universally, like, you're like,
exactly.
I don't talk to you.
Exactly. So, I choke up the deuce up and they're like, oh, he's got headphones in, and I just kind of can keep stretching. So not only do I use the music to get me pumped, but I use it as kind of a way to keep me focused and not to let people know that I'm,
Yeah, it's funny. I noticed that's a universal thing with coaches and people who work in the gym. It's funny. Mine are always big and obnoxious. And it's like, sometimes I'm not actually listening to anything.
I was about to say that. Sometimes I don't even have music going, dude. I just got them in. Yep.
Yeah, it's just so like,
people know.
It just creates that barrier in that space where it's like, it creates that boundary. And I want to be very clear, and I think you're the way it seems is, like, we love everybody in the gym. We love talking to you.
Oh, they're my family.
Yeah. Like, I want to engage with you. Like, if you're hearing me say this and you're someone who's come up and talked to me while I'm wearing headphones, I really want to engage with you. But I also want to get my session in.
Exactly.
And it's like, it's one of the reasons why, like, a lot of my friends are like, man, I want to climb with you. I'm like, I climb between the hours of 6 a.m. to like 7 or 8 a.m. And, they're like, I'm not getting up that early to go climb. I'm like, sorry. Like, that's just
when I go. Like,
yeah. Well, it's also because the gym is like, it's quiet. There's barely anybody in there. It's really just the staff.
Yep.
And then also to, training rope, a few rope partners that I have, like, the gym is just deserted. So I don't have to wait in line.
Yep.
Yeah. The world of being a coach is a little different. It's not too bad. It's good. It's fun. But there are, I think, boundaries and intent are probably like the two big things.
Totally.
So if you had to give someone advice who wants to become a coach and like they're considering, like someone walks up to you, they're like, man, I really want to become a climbing coach. Like, what would you tell them? Like, how would you tell them to get started?
Climb as much as you can. Be, immerse yourself in the climbing world. Watch videos, read. Look at magazines. I mean, climbing is such a part of me that, I think a lot of people at the gym don't realize how much of it is literally my life. You know what I mean? My entire Instagram, I don't follow most of the people that I work with on my Instagram. My Instagram is climbing only. Like, I follow mostly climbers on my Instagram. I have a Facebook for friends.
Mm-hmm.
All my Instagram is climbing stuff and me following professional climbers. When I'm watching videos on YouTube and stuff like that, I'm usually watching, mellow climbing videos and stuff like that. What I mean? When I'm sitting at my house, I watch climbing things a lot. I read about climbing stuff. Most of my vacations and traveling are revolved around climbing. It is my life. Everything I kind of do is somehow revolved around it. And so I would say, if you are trying to get into coaching, make it part of your life. It's not just a hobby. It's not just a thing. It is, and I say this, I don't know, maybe lightly, but it's a lifestyle. A climber is a type of person. I feel like it really is. And I've also realized that in general, the climbing community is just full of such amazing people. I have met so many awesome people in the climbing community. I mean, I'm sure with all communities, it's like that, but pretty much everywhere I've ever gone, without having spoken to the person prior and then finding out they're a climber, it's an immediate like, oh wow. Now I feel very connected to you. And like, if you're a heavy climber and I bump into you at a restaurant somewhere and we start talking, it's like we're best friends almost. We can talk about climbing for a really long time.
Oh yeah, no, it's universal.
It really
you go
is.
To an airport, you see climbers like you see the hand movements, you see things talking about boulders. I'm like I've been traveling with a friend. I'm like looking across the airport. I'm like, they're talking about rock climbing.
You can pick them out.
Yeah. And then people is like, how do you know? I'm like, just because they look like mimes.
Yep. Or you see their feet.
Yeah. Truth.
But yeah, man, I would say just immerse yourself in it. Learn as much as you can. Climb as much as you can. And just, make it part of your life. It's so much more than climbing is just so much more than climbing. I've learned how to navigate my entire life, I feel like, kind of through the skills I've learned.
Yeah.
Through climbing.
Yeah. So. Truth. And then, so they've done that and then they've kind of really gotten into it and they've applied for a job. What's the next thing you would tell them that they need to, I guess, like what is the next advice that you would give them on the first day on the job?
Get to know your kids. Get to know the kids you're teaching. Get to know what their goals are. Get to know, where their headspace is. get to know how, where they want this to go and, you know, feel them out. So I have kids that I'm like, oh man, I have a couple kids where I'm like, you are so strong. You easily could be in the future, the next like professional climber, but they're not motivated in the competitive aspect of things.
Yep.
They love climbing. And I'm like, oh, you're probably going to be one of those dirtbag people who just loves to get, you're going to be a crusher. I can see it in you. You're extremely motivated. You love climbing, but you don't have that competitive aspect. You just want to go and climb and have fun and love it. And you're always probably going to be super crazy strong, but you just don't want to probably compete. And then I have the other kids who are like, I want to be the next Yanya. I want to be in the Olympics. I want to compete. And I'm like, okay, if that's what you want, I'll do everything in my power to get you there and to motivate you and to keep pushing you in that direction. But same thing for the kids who are like, I just enjoy climbing and I want to be here because I like the community. I like working with you. And I just, you know, I like the sport. Then yeah, I want to continue to feed their stoke and make them strong, but also like let them know that it's okay that they don't want to be the next professional climber
Absolutely. You know, and 100%.
And then I also have the kids, like you were saying earlier, who are just there because their friends are there and they just enjoy climbing. They don't care if one day they're climbing V10 or V15 or anything like that. I mean, I'm sure they want to get better, but they're not.
There's no desire.
There's no desire. They're not.
Yeah, there's not a burn.
There's not a burn. Just,
they get better. They get better.
Exactly. And that's okay. That is okay. Like figuring out what your students want and helping them achieve that is the biggest thing that I can tell a new coach to try to figure out, because everybody's going to have their different goals. Everybody's going to kind of be taught, you know, there's different ways to teach all of the kids. Everybody's going to be like respond better to certain teaching methods, and learning the methods that work best for those kids is a big part of it. And, you know, you might pick that up in a week. You might pick it up after working with them for a year. Some of the kids I'm coaching right now, I've worked with for 2 years and I'm still figuring them out and figuring out what motivates them and figuring out how to get them stoked on things. And then other kids I knew right out, you know, first day, how to get them pumped and do it. You know what I mean? And so I would just say, talk to your kids, figure out what gets their gears turning, you know, talk to them about their life outside of climbing. They, you know, climbing is not their whole world, at least not yet. It might not be. Like, figure out what kind of people they are, figure out what kind of stuff they like to do, figure out what their goals are, and just be their friend. And then after that, once you have that connection with them, it's a lot easier to get them stoked and find out like how to encourage them to achieve their goals.
Yeah. And then the last question I have for you in regards to like helping a new person coming into this injury, what would you tell them to watch out for personally? And like, you know, like what do they need to be aware of? What are the dangers or the traps or the things that can make them lose the desire to do this, and or maybe the things that they need to be aware of, but like if there is anything.
It's a really good question.
Yeah, take time. There is no rush for any answer.
I have learned and really tried to keep my, you know, all the kids I teach, even though they're all on such different levels, having a good time together and not really competing with each other and like, you know, and singling each other out and saying, you know, oh, I'm better than you. I'm better than this person. I'm stronger than this person. And kind of not letting the stronger people in the class be put on a pedestal.
Okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
Because I don't want to say it happens naturally, but
it does.
It kind of does. You know what I mean?
The pecking order. I mean, the natural pecking order always kind of flows out. It's just, do they handle it with grace or not?
Totally. Totally. Making sure the kids you're teaching that are the strongest kids in your class are also humble about it is a good thing, because it also teaches the kids who are not as strong to be, you know, humble about themselves. But, and also, you know, giving the kids that aren't the best in the class the same amount of attention that you might be giving the best kids in the class. It's really hard to find. In smaller classes, it's easy to spread yourself out and kind of get, you know, if you're only teaching 4 or 5 kids, it's pretty easy to give those 4 or 5 kids like kind of like your entire attention in the 2 hours that you're working with them. You can kind of bounce around and give some of those kids 100% of your attention. If you're teaching a class that's 10 or more, it feels hard to connect to some of these kids on a personal level. So, you know, try not to single out the kids that are the strongest kids and just connect with them. Make sure you're giving all your kids, you know, the same amount of encouragement and same amount of attention. Make sure nobody feels left out. Make sure that the kids who aren't as strong don't feel like they're being, you know, overshadowed by the kids who are the strongest in your class. I really try to create a community and like camaraderie between all the kids in the class and make sure that the strongest kids are encouraging the weaker kids and vice versa. And that everybody is stoked for everybody's sins, not mm-hmm. just the person who's working that, you know, V8 or whatever, and they finally get their project. I want, whenever that kid gets his V8 and everybody's stoked about it, I want the same amount of stoke that goes into that from the class to be there when that other kid sends their very first V2. I want all the kids in the class to be just as stoked about it and know that this kid worked hard to get mm-hmm. there. And I want them to appreciate that and, like, you know, be there for each other. I mean, that has been, navigating that has been an interesting thing for me, and trying to get all my kids kind of on that same level of encouragement with each other. I think I've gotten the hang of it finally, but figuring it out and how to.
No, I mean, it's group dynamics is very, 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 it is an art more than it is a science. I would say that is an art by far more than it is a science.
It is. It's taken a second for me to understand that. I came into coaching with such a different mindset than I have right now.
What was your mindset that you came in with?
When I came in, so for starters, I came into coaching. My friend offered me kind of, you know, he was like, hey, would you like to start coaching at our gym? And immediately I was like, yes. You know, I used to compete.
Mm-hmm.
My head went right to competitive team. I was like, yeah, I want to coach the best of the best. I want to coach the kids that are trying to be the best climbers in the world. Yes, that's mm-hmm. what I want to do. I want to turn these little kids into monsters, which again, I do that. I do that currently. I turn most of my kids that I coach, I'm turning into monsters. I train them very hard, especially the kids who want to get good. I push them mm-hmm. right to that limit. And I know their limits. But, you know, I came into it like thinking that. And then I kind of found out, oh, wait, you're not going to be coaching competitive team. You're going to be working with kind of our rec team and these kids who are just like, they're here for fun. You can't just jump right into coaching a competitive team. Like, a lot goes into that. The coach that we have, Ben, you know, they like picked him out and basically offered him a job when he was living mm-hmm. in Dallas. And we're like, we want you. So that's, you know, that's a big deal. He's got a history of coaching, and there's a lot of weight behind his name. People know who he is. He worked with Team Texas and mm-hmm. things like that. And so for me to be like, oh, okay, I guess I'm not working with competitive team. I'm working with kids who are just kind of here for fun. That was a little bit of a shocker to me. I was like, do I want to do that? Do I want to work with kids who are not really serious about it? And then the lady who was in charge of the youth program has kind of told me, you make your class what you want to make it. Mm-hmm. If you want to just come in here and kind of babysit these kids and spend time with them, then right on. If you want to find, you know, if you want to come in here and work with these kids and turn them into little climbing monsters, then do that. It's your class. You know, I respect you and I trust you. You do what you, as long as you're being a good person and, you know, not teaching these kids how to climb, do whatever works for you. And so figuring out that, you know, figuring out what I was going to do with that, and then learning that I can take these kids who are just kind of in here for fun and turn them into these kids that might want to be these world-class climbers also was a thing. But I, you know, like I said, I was a little bummed when I heard that, but then I was like, you know what? That's okay. Cause I'm working with kids who don't already have that drive
mm-hmm.
and I can help them find that drive.
Mm-hmm.
And so as kind of like what you were saying, not just the people who are trying to be the best climbers in the world or the ones who are there for fun. It's the middle.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I found myself being, was in that middle grouping and being like, this is the most important part. The kids who are already, you know, working to be the best in the world, they already know that's what they want.
Yeah.
They are self-motivated. You don't have to push them really much at all. You're literally pushing them to train harder. You're there to say, you can do this, and making sure they're training correctly. They already have the fire. You don't have to stoke it.
Yeah, agreed.
Those middle kids, those are the ones who are kind of unsure about things. They're like, you know, I like this, but I don't know. Or I kind of feel like I'm getting better, but I don't know. That is exactly like what you were saying. That is where the coaching really comes into play, because getting those kids motivated is everything, man.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. Yeah. Limit, what is it? New York cut steaks are great, but there's more ground beef and everyone loves a burger.
Exactly.
And so I think that's the thing that, you know, is important, and understanding that, like, growing that section grows your program.
Totally.
That is what makes it go good.
Totally. And they're kind of the community of.
Oh yeah, they are. They grow up to be the primary members.
Exactly.
Of the gym.
The ones who are like, they're kind of for fun.
But they've been climbing for years.
Yep.
I mean, like, how many people do you meet? Like, yeah, I climbed on team for a while and then, you know, that's it. Or how many people do you meet? Like, yeah, I was in a youth program and I just still climb to this day.
Yeah, no, it's,
they do it.
You got them for life, kind of. And you're turning these kids into climbers and you're building the climbing community and the future of climbing with these kids. And if I want the climbing community to be as awesome as it was for me and to continue to get better and more encouraging and inviting to people who aren't already part of it, then I'm the person who gets to build the foundation for the future generation of the climbing community. And I love that.
Agreed. Agreed. Well, Drew, I want to thank you for your time and I would definitely love to talk with you again. And I want to catch up with you next time I'm in town, but do you have a shout out? Do you want to say hello to anybody? I mean, my platform is your platform. I mean, you got the mic right now. So if not, I mean, you can go full ghost status. It's up to you.
You know, a big shout out to my family, my mom and my dad, for giving me the unique opportunity that I'm in right now to be the coach that I am, because if it weren't for them, I would probably be a lot more strapped financially and I wouldn't be able to have the same mentality that I do right now to share with my kids and have the same kind of love and energy and bubbly personality that I kind of have that transfers over into my kids. If I was always stressed about money and if I was always stressed about bills, I'm not sure I'd be able to be as good of a coach in all honesty. And so I really am appreciative of my parents for giving me the opportunity to be a coach right now, as well as my friend Dylan Stone, who is essentially the person who got me into coaching. He picked me out of the gym and the crowd and said, "Hey dude, I think you would be a good coach. Would you want to do this?" And if it weren't for him, I would probably not be coaching at all.
Thank you, Dylan.
Yeah. Thanks, Dylan. I really appreciate you, man.
Friends and enemies, lovers and haters, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Two Coaches Talking Shop about why they love to give back to the community. Please remember, we are selling Sens and Tuffer t-shirts. Get your t-shirt, $30, $5 for shipping and handling. I'll get that out to you. And remember, we are posting episodes bi-monthly right now. Not every week, not once a month. I'm trying to keep up something that I can keep on keeping. I'm going to get out of here before I ramble. And remember, if you're not suffering, I mean, was that Sen really even worth it at all? I mean, you got to ask yourself.